we've got here is failure to communicate. Some men you just can't reach.
Hello and welcome back, and thanks for listening. This week's topic touches just about all of us who work. Meetings. Whether you're attending one, arranging one, or orchestrating one, the next interview is going to be of value to you, I promise, as someone who discovered mid-interview that I had been running my meetings wrong for years. I'll attest to the veracity and efficacy of Professor Steven Rogelberg's new book titled The Surprising Science of Meetings, How You Can Lead Your Team to Peak Performance from Oxford Press. Professor Rogelberg is a researcher and meetings expert who offers an evidence-based approach to solving the common failures of workplace meetings, including, but not exclusive of, inefficiency, ineffectiveness, and a lack of engagement. Basically, if your meetings do not sound like this, then you're doing it wrong.
But diversity only works when it's truly leveraged and used. Right, those voices have to be heard and integrated, and you need to promote constructive conflict. Right, you want conflict, because conflict of ideas is where greatness can happen. But you want it to, again, be done in a safe, constructive, meaningful way. And so the more that a leader can do to, you know, bring all these voices and getting them chatting and talking, I mean, some amazing things can happen. Meetings can be a tremendous source of energy, creativity, and innovation.
On the very day we recorded, the Washington Post listed The Surprising Science of Meetings as the number one business book to read this year. How to prep a meeting, run a meeting, and importantly, how to end a meeting is all next. Here we go.
My name is Steven Rogelberg, and I hold the role of Chancellor's Professor at the University of North Carolina, Charlotte, as well as professor of management, psychology, and organizational science.
And the author of a book that just dropped, The Surprising Science of Meetings, How You Can Lead Your Team to Peak Performance. When I started my notes, I have to say, I put into Google, surprising science, and it auto-completed of happiness. And then right below that was of meetings. So I thought that was an interesting correlation, because we put so much of ourselves at work into the meetings, and of course our work is part of our happiness, hopefully. I think you found a real sweet spot here with this kind of book. What led you to want to write it?
Because meetings were driving me crazy. I was just one of those people that found being held captive in a bad meeting just so incredibly miserable. And as an organizational scientist, I get to study a host of topics related to individual and organizational health, well-being, and effectiveness. And the ones that I'm attracted to are topics that are just driving people bonkers. And I want to try to do science on them with the hopes of making them better and less frustrating.
Well, we definitely appreciate data-driven decision-making. So I used to be a director at a media company, and so my first rule from my VP right above me was always obtain a written agenda in advance. I'm going to ask you just a straight-up, true or false, does that bear out in your data?
So agendas are an interesting thing. I have a chapter in my book called Agendas Are a Hollow Crutch. Because people assume it's that one tactic that they can do. And if they do have an agenda, then, wow, they must be good at leading meetings. And the fact is, the research shows that having an agenda in of itself doesn't predict effectiveness. And if you really think about it, it's not a surprise. What matters most is what's on the agenda. Is the agenda items relevant to the people that are there? Did people have a voice in deciding, you know, what to include on it? And most importantly, how did the leader facilitate the accomplishment of the agenda? So if that leader has a very inclusive and creates a safe environment for individuals, well, that's going to be more important than the items in and of themselves.
Now, does that play into the overall length of meetings as well? And the reason I ask is I have a follow-up that we're not quite to yet, but is the overall length of a meeting directly correlative to the results?
As meetings increase in time, process issues, employee fatigue and drain, multitasking, all these things increase. So definitely longer meetings are much, much trickier. But with that said, if it is a fantastic meeting leader facilitator that builds in breaks, that has a diverse meeting experience, because a good leader can have a whole host of tools at their disposal. So if they design kind of this rich experience, then you can have a longer meeting.
How do you avoid mission creep? Because that's what we used to call it at NBC. Mission creep is when a meeting kind of gets off the rails a little bit, or everybody in the room feels like they have to have their voice heard about something, or else they're not earning their paycheck, that kind of thing. That's a culture shift, kind of, isn't it, when it comes to running a meeting in a modern way?
So much of it comes back down to the meeting leader and the role that they are enacting in that meeting. If a meeting leader truly embraces the idea that they are a steward of others' time, and that their job is to facilitate an experience that is able to fully leverage the incredible talent and resources in the meeting, so trying to create a dynamic and meaningful experience, if that's the lens that they have, well, they're going to, mission creep is just not going to happen, because when it shows itself, the meeting leader is going to have the skills to say, hey, this is an important topic and issue that you're broaching. Let's move it over here, or let's come back to it. And people will believe that person will indeed come back to it. And so when that leader is kind of in that steward mindset, they are actively facilitating the experience and, you know, managing the ups and downs, the ebbs and flows of, you know, a rich conversation that occurs.
Let me reintroduce you real quick. We're speaking with Professor Steven Rogelberg. His new book is called The Surprising Science of Meetings. It's one of the top leadership books for people to read in 2019, according to several media sources, including this one. When you add up meeting time, do you include the pre-prep that has to come with that, which I imagine would entail either conversations passing in the hallways or emails?
That's an interesting question. There's a lot of meeting activity that occurs outside of the meeting, for sure. When I think about meeting time, I'm more dialed into the time that's actually scheduled for it. I think those allotments can be handled very meaningfully. I believe that when you have a meeting leader who is genuine in the role of meeting leader, there's actually less pre-meeting and post-meeting activity because people believe that what's happening in the meeting is fully real. I'm much more focused on what time is allocated and how is that leader leading the meeting. And then there's going to be prep. And when you're a steward of others' time, then you recognize that you just can't dial it in. You need to think before a meeting starts. You need to think about how you want to approach that meeting, maybe some potential problems. So, for example, there's a concept called a pre-mortem, where you imagine an event and imagine it going wrong, and then you kind of say, oh, how can I prevent that? I believe that if a leader just spends, even if it's just 5 minutes, thinking and preparing mentally for a meeting, they're going to execute that meeting much more effectively. It's my belief, and I don't have specific data, this is more anecdotal data, that the modal meeting has zero planning, that leader is just showing up in the room and starting to kind of go through an agenda, but they really haven't thought through the meeting experience. So even if I can get these leaders to spend 5 minutes just thinking, that if they can view the meeting similarly to how they would view a customer interaction, where we would never think about dialing in for a customer interaction, give it the same thought and then execute.
I see. I personally, by the way, the phrase steward of others' time is a marvelous phrase that I am going to actively integrate into my conversation and interview skills. I was an English major, and so when I would create an agenda for my team, which was a weekly update meeting, we studied what was called Freytag's Pyramid. You're probably familiar with it. It's a five-act play, like a Shakespearean play, where you have rising action, declining action, and I try to put the good stuff right in the middle. Do you have a tips to success when it comes to building that agenda, other than, like you said, the five-minute pre-prep and give it just a little bit of thought? That might just be enough. I'm just asking if there's something a little deeper.
Oh, I love it. It's a great question. And I'm a big believer that you start a meeting with your best stuff.
Okay.
So people arrive, you know, give them, you know, maybe have 5 minutes at most, some announcements of some key information, but no more than 5 minutes, and then jump in with the meatiest and most important items at hand. That grabs people's interest. Mm. It also assures that the most important topics are covered before time runs out.
Okay, that's fair. So that means I was running my meetings incorrectly for about 3.5 years. The easy follow-up there is, when you said before time is up, is it good to have a hard out when it comes to these meetings?
Meetings should never run late.
Meetings should never run late. Okay.
We've actually done a number of studies that look at lateness to meetings. And lateness to meetings is definitely a source of frustration. We actually find that it changes the entire climate of the meeting. That when meetings start late, when we videotape meetings, you actually start to notice that there is more negative communication. There's more side conversations. People aren't as engaged when a meeting starts late. But with that all said, the one thing that's even more frustrating than starting late is ending late. Employees feel it a tremendous violation of their psychological contract when it ends late, and basically it puts them into usually a huge jam for the next event, likely a meeting on their schedule.
I think that's where most people can probably empathize with the purpose of your book and the way you'd like to run a meeting. I want to pivot just a little bit to meetings with remote workers. More and more people working from home due to congestion in urban environments, or because they're freelancers on contract, or maybe they live in another part of the world. How can some of your data apply specifically to meetings where remote workers have to be included either visually or audibly?
Everything is harder with meetings with remote employees. The role of the meeting leader increases in importance. And what specifically increases is their role of being an active traffic controller. They need to recognize that they are the ones holding this all together. So first of all, as much as we can, we want these things to occur with visual cues. We need video. Mm. Without video, the likelihood of having like a good meeting when you start surpassing 3 or 4 people is very, very low. So we want video. We want the equipment completely tested and working prior to the meeting. And then once that meeting starts, that leader is calling people by name. Hey, Jane, I'd love to hear your thoughts on this. Sasha, can you chime in here? Do you agree with this? David, Gordon. And they're basically making it so that people aren't fading away in the background, that they recognize that they're actually truly there. Mm-hmm. It's very interesting. One of the things that we find in our research that when you ask people, what's the least effective meeting type? They say the virtual meeting. And then you ask them, what meeting type do you prefer to attend? They say the virtual meeting. And the reason is, so they can multitask.
Right.
So they
right.
can do other things during that meeting. That's a sad state of affairs.
Yeah, not very effective, not very productive, right?
Not very productive for the meeting. So basically, the meeting leader just has to recognize that they have to bring people in, leverage the chat room to create an additional communication channel that people can say, hey, I have something I want to communicate. But then you keep meetings shorter and do things in the intervals between these shorter meetings. So, for example, you could poll individuals and have people all contribute what they see are their best ideas. You know, use a Survey Monkey. Well, brainstorming in that mechanism is going to get a lot more ideas if you do it live on the conference. You know, create a Google document where people can comment on kind of what's being proposed in between the meeting. And then the meetings take on lesser importance for as mechanisms for true and genuine discourse, right? Because that's the piece that's going to be hard to accomplish in so many remote meetings.
It seems to me that a takeaway from that answer would be that better the leader is at multitasking, the less multitasking distracted attendees will be, right? You're dealing with you're dealing with a chat room. You're dealing with video. You might have to roll some slides or something off of Apple Pages. It just seems like the better that the leader, which I think is probably the point of the book, which is of course titled "The Surprising Science of Meetings." The point of the book would be better at being a leader, and you'll get more production out of your team.
So I mean, that's a really interesting point you make. And what I would say is yes, the leader in these remote meetings is multitasking in a constructive manner. But they can do it as long as they keep recognizing that they're a steward of others' time. If they are trying to use that meeting to truly just feature their own thoughts, privilege their own opinions, that perspective is going to be hard to jive with the task of being, you know, truly trying to orchestrate the experience. But if they have that steward mindset, you know, they can pull off
right.
the dynamics of it, especially if it, again, if it's kept shorter and there's more activity outside the margins of the meeting, leveraging a wealth of various tools.
I'm cognizant of your time, Professor. I don't want to waste it. I have two more questions. I hope you can grace me with a little bit more. Are meetings opportunities for the reinforcement of culture or reintroduction of culture?
I would say that meetings and culture are almost the same thing. That an organization as an entity comes to life in a meeting. You can see everything there. Power, safety, inclusion.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, all the organizational values can come to life there. So it would be my contention that the meeting leader, through her or his acts, can just do incredible good or incredible harm to an organization's culture, depending on what they do in these meetings.
Okay.
And if you think about a meeting leader or a leader in general, right? So they could say certain things to you privately, but what they say publicly mm-hmm. in front of others is a much more profound statement.
Right.
And our data actually support this, by the way, that we find that what the behaviors that a leader does in meetings becomes a tremendous predictor of employee engagement outside of meetings.
That seems to be a parallel path of how an annual budget is a statement of ethics for a company at the same time. Not just strategy and strategic tent poles, but also what's important for this company for at least this year. Seems like running a meeting kind of runs parallel with that.
Oh, I love that. That's a great connection. Yeah, I mean, if you think about it, you're bringing together a collection of individuals. And your hope is that you're doing that because you believe that each individual has a meaningful perspective or something unique about their perspective, that when all these voices are put together, something great can happen, right? That's the whole power of diversity, mm-hmm. diversity of thoughts and ideas. But diversity only works when it's truly leveraged and used, right? Those voices have to be heard and integrated, and you need to promote constructive conflict, right? You want conflict because conflict of ideas is where greatness can happen, but you want it to, again, be done in a safe, constructive, meaningful way. And so the more that a leader can do to, you know, bring all these voices and getting them chatting and talking, I mean, some amazing things can happen. Meetings can be a tremendous source of energy, creativity, and innovation.
Okay, then my last question is going to have to be anecdotal, and that is whether you're managing up, managing down, and you're running a meeting, and you're trying to be a better steward of a meeting, how do you end a meeting when you see people starting to check out? And I think I know you know what I'm talking about, right? Like people start to look down a little bit more, maybe making notes that don't make sense, or maybe they're looking at their phone or trying to sneak a look at their watch. How do you wrap that up in a positive way? Let's say you've lost the room almost, and you want to pull it back.
So first of all, when that happens to you, make note of it, because ultimately you designed a poor meeting experience. You did not end well, right? So some choices you made were not good. So take this as feedback that next time you can do better, right? Reflect on this, what led to this, and think about how you could have designed your way out of it. In the actual moment, if a meeting is kind of starting to die and you don't see an easy path out, end it. Just end it. Thank people for their time, what they contributed. Hopefully some good stuff has come from it. And say, hey, you know what? We're hitting this item. You know, it's clear. Energy is down. You know, let's reflect on it. Maybe we can cover this particular item outside of the meeting. We can put it on a Google Doc or whatever, a quick email poll. And just end it. You have the control. And this is also what makes meetings so frustrating for so many people, right? Because when you walk in that room, you're relenting control to someone else.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a hard thing to do. And it can be very frustrating when that person does not truly own that responsibility and do it in a steward mindset. So if you're seeing things are not working, given that you have control, then you have the ability to say, hey, you know what? this has been good. This has been helpful. We accomplished X, Y, and Z. Let's stop here and circle back later.
It's a wonderful book. If you ever run a meeting, you need this on your shelf or borrow it from your boss. Stephen, thank you so much for your time today.
Oh, thank you. It really was a pleasure.
That was Professor Stephen Rogelberg talking about his new book titled The Surprising Science of Meetings, How You Can Lead Your Team to Peak Performance. It's from Oxford Press, and it's shortlisted as a must-read by The Washington Post. Professor Rogelberg is a researcher and meetings expert who offers an evidence-based approach to solving the common failures of workplace meetings, including inefficiency, ineffectiveness, and a lack of engagement, especially towards the end. Slip a copy into your boss's inbox if you can, worth every penny and every second of your time. Links to The Surprising Science of Meetings, as well as the professor's bio, are in the show notes, either at KGORadio.com or in the podcast. Thanks for listening, and for executive producer Lee Hammer, I'm the host and the writer, Jason Middleton. This has been Techonomics. Have great weeks, everybody.